Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of June 12th. Wow. Then with me, after being cleared to resume baseball activities, is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Yeah, I'm off the DL, babe.
What does that feel like when the doctor says, hey, you're clear to go?
Well, I don't want to go into too much detail, but the doctor thought I was good to go 6 weeks ago.
All right. So, yeah.
There was some disagreement with the manager.
It was disagreement between the personal trainer and the team physician.
Something like that. Well, I think that overstates people's qualifications in one case.
Hashtag high heat.
I think we should stop while we're just,
I think, yeah,
just while below I'm, the surface here.
We stop, still while, stop while I'm still employed.
So on this week's show, we've got a chat with Brian Wolf of Seivu, and we're going to talk about the Lions, the Giant Skid, the 2000 hit guys, and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so on Wednesday, we bumped into each other at MetLife Dome, forever in my heart known as Seibu Dome. But anyway, what a surprise.
The park formerly known as Prince.
Formerly known as lots of things, yeah, yeah. But what a surprise when I walked in and saw that familiar hat of yours. And I thought, well, wow, somebody has a hat just like Jim, and he's tall.
I was sitting down, wasn't I?
You were standing.
Oh, okay. Well, then you couldn't see that then. Yeah, but it was a shock. John said he told me he was going, and I don't remember it. And I decided the night before that I would go since I was off. So, yeah, this cretin comes up behind me and gives me a hug. And I'm like, wow, this is cool.
So, yeah, and I was going out to talk to Brian Wolf. Now, Brian is 36, and he started with Nippon Ham back in 2010. And then the next 2 years, he was with SoftBank, and he joined the Lions last year, but he has suffered a number of injuries that have really slowed him down or have slowed him down through the years. But he's been pitching effectively for Seibu. He started with them last year, midway through the year, and pitched okay. And they brought him back this year, and he started out fairly well. He's a great guy. We've been able to I tried to track him down last year at Seibu Dome, when it was named something else, who knows what. And either he wasn't around. You know, pitchers get a day off after a start. Sometimes, depending on the team and whether they're on the road or not, they get the second day off. But I just couldn't find him. I had gone out there a few times and never got a chance to say hello, so I hadn't seen him in years. And, it was nice to sit down. So here, suddenly Jim is with me, and we got to double-team Wolfie for about 5 minutes. And during that time, you'll hear Ernesto Mejia comes up, and he's going to go off and talk to Jim. So you hear Jim come in, Jim go away, and then Jim come back about halfway through the chat. But it was a really fun talk.
It's like a mini-series already. Come on, let's go.
Well, just a three-game series. That's not so bad. Anyway, okay. It was a really fun chat, so let's take a listen. Sitting down with us at MetLife Dome is Brian Wolf. Man, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks. Good to see you guys. Good to be back.
Love the hair. didn't get to tell you.
You're saying that, but he's got more than me. So that's not very politically correct.
It's good seeing you. I wanted to say hello to you when you came back to the Lions. Well, came to the Lions last year, but didn't get a chance. So welcome back. And how has this journey been for you with the injuries and everything that you've experienced since you've been in Japan?
It's been a little bit of a whirlwind, playing with the Hawks and getting injured. Started off well, got injured. Second year was kind of just, coming back to baseball with the new elbow, basically. And then, taking the time off the following year, I wasn't sure if we were going to play again or not. And then Seibu called and said they were interested. And, everything turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, like 4-0 good.
It was last year.
And then it started this year.
Yeah, it did. It was nice.
All right, so how are you physically now? I know you're coming off to basically a stint with the farm because you had a hamstring?
No, it was oblique, a little bit of an oblique.
Okay. And how are you physically now?
It's better now. I feel a little bit, but, when I talked to the doctor, he said it's not going to get any worse, and if I could pitch through it, and it's all last outing, we started back up, and we were able to get 5, so hopefully next time we'll be up to 6 or 7.
Pitching in pain, that's new.
Yeah. I think I'm used to that by now.
All right, so as of right now, this is your best ERA during a season, and how do you compare this year and even the end of last year to the previous seasons that you've had in Japan?
You know, just coming back, you know, it was knowing that I could have already retired and then coming back and, you know, just had a different perspective on it. It was just more enjoyable, you know. It was basically an extra life that I didn't have, so it made it a lot easier. And then being with these guys, I mean, they put up runs so early, it makes it easier to pitch for me. I mean, we got a lead. It seems like every time I turn around, we got a lead, so it's a lot easier to pitch. You're not pitching defensively, and pitching offensively helps.
I have to ask, you know, when you heard you got a new manager who said his primary focus was going to be on defense, what was your first thought about that?
I don't know, because last year for me the defense was fine. You know, okay. I pitched quick. I didn't really have much problem with them. Maybe it was some of the other guys pitch a little slower, throw more balls in the counts, but it seemed like they were fine with me. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the offense wasn't going to change. They were the same guys right. in the lineup. So, defensively, shortstop, we've gotten a little better, and you know he's hitting well. And so, I have no complaints.
Seems like your number of base runners per inning is down, and you're getting more ground balls as well. Are you trying to pitch that way?
I've always kind of been a ground ball pitcher. It's just, you know, I think having the leads helped. You know, I'm not trying to be as fine. I'm, you know, throwing more balls over the plate and just with a little bit of movement, and that just seems to be the result.
Well, the result is, of course, with this young shortstop, Sosuke Genda, the result is the defense is better and it's helping out the pitching staff. But what do you think about this young kid's play at short?
I mean, he's been great. I mean, they were all over him in spring training. He was doing a lot of extra work getting ready, you know, being his first year. So, I mean, I was hoping he wasn't going to get too tired in spring training. He came out ready to go, so that was nice.
Now, what do you mean they were all over him in spring training?
You know, being the rookie and then being the starting shortstop, that's a lot of pressure on a guy. So that's kind of the biggest thing is he's up the middle guy. He's reliant on the defense, so that's a lot of pressure for a young guy, I think, and, you know, he's handled it well.
All right. Now, what's going on with this rotation? I kind of expected some more consistency with guys like Tawata and Kona Takahashi, but I haven't seen it. What's going on with those guys?
You know, they've both had that little bit of injury with their shoulders, and I don't know what was causing it, but you know, hopefully we're going to get Tawata back here in a couple weeks and then Kona not far behind, and hopefully they'll be good for the rest of the season then. I mean, Yusei and Nogami have kind of been holding down the fort for us, and it's been good to watch them pitch.
What do you think about those two guys? Are they guys that you can build this particularly Tawata? Do you think they can build the rest of the rotation around them in the future, or are they those guys just going to be middle-of-the-rotation guys?
You know, I think both Kona and Tawata both are capable of being top of the rotation guys. I mean, Kona's still young, and, you know, he's just going to keep getting better. And, you know, Tawata's a little more polished at this point, I think. But, you know, both of them have good enough stuff, and, you know, they've already tabbed Tawata as one of the future guys. And I think that might have caused a little pressure at the beginning, but I think he's one that can handle it.
Okay. Now, I know you only spent the latter part of the season here last year, but you did play a little bit under the old manager, and now you have a new manager. What have you seen in the difference between those two guys?
Actually, for me as a pitcher, I don't really interact too much because I'm more with the pitching coaches, which is Dorian Mori, and they've been the same. So those are kind of the guys I interact with. The manager, both of them are great to me. You know, they're always saying hi, always friendly. So it's hard to say. I'm not a position player, so they don't really – not much interaction there.
Have you seen the interaction between the manager and the players?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, especially with the defensive aspects. He's always out there hands-on, you know, especially with Genda and the shortstop. And, you know, that was his position, so he knows how to teach it, and I think, you know, that's good for Genda.
All right, now, I heard about this mound that it wasn't very good. I've heard pitchers complain about it. How do you feel about it?
Well, they changed it this year. It's definitely harder, but it's not higher yet. They said it was going to be higher and harder. It's harder. They put clay on it, but it's still a little lower. I mean, it's just like most of the mounds in Japan. They're all different, so you just have to make an adjustment on them.
What's your favorite mound in Japan?
I'll probably support them.
Why is that?
It's the closest to an MLB mound that I think I've seen here.
All right, now, a long time ago, I asked you about Shohei Ohtani. You were teammates at the time. Mm-hmm. He was a rookie. How has he improved on the mound in terms of what you've seen through the years?
His secondary pitches have definitely gotten a lot better. He throws them for strikes now. His fastball's always been there, but I think he's able to throw secondary pitches, and he can attack with the secondary pitches. And I think, you know, that's a big thing the scouts wanted to see, too, when they come over here and watch him.
What about him as a batter? Did you get to face him last year?
No, I faced him this year. Actually, no, I did face him last year, too. But, yeah, he's got a double and a home run off me already this year.
You think he should just focus on the pitching?
I think he should.
Yeah.
You still think that? Because I was going to say, I kind of recall that you said he should probably focus on the pitching.
That's because I don't want to face him.
Now? Yeah. Or was it that?
Both.
Yeah, I heard there was a petition going around to say, come on, you got to be our principal pitcher.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was it like facing him this year then?
Oh, that's good. You know, he's a good kid. And, you know, we joked about it before the game. And then, you know, he's just such a good hitter, too. I don't know. Facing him, it's tough. He's a good hitter. He's got a good discipline at the plate. And, you know, you make a mistake, he hits it hard.
The Lions, I picked the Lions to finish somewhere around third, I think. I don't think a lot of other people did, and they were worried about the defense. But how do you see this team going forward here? You guys are in the chase, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like as long as we finish in the top three and make the playoffs with Ducey at the top of the rotation, we got a good shot in any series we play. I mean, I know talking with other guys and other teams, nobody wants to face him. So, I mean, number one goal is just get the playoffs, and I think we got a team that can get us there. And then, you know, riding him in the playoffs, so we got a good chance.
I do have a question. It's about interleague. You know, when you come in, you're facing the Central League batters. Is there any difference you notice in the swings they get or think compared to the PL guys you're used to facing?
I feel like they don't necessarily know exactly what we're throwing. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's a little – they're a little foreign the first couple times up. They're not too sure how we're going to attack them. So, I mean, it's definitely our advantage. And, you know, having the pitcher in the lineup always helps me. I mean, it's nice to have one less big power bat in the lineup.
Of course, the pitchers hit well.
Some of them do.
Some of them do.
All right. Well, good luck, man. We'll be watching. Okay.
Okay, you go.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you again, Brian. It's really fun to sit down and to spend that much time with you again. So, Shohei Ohtani, you got to love how the pitchers log their hits in their minds. He remembers that Ohtani has a double and a home run against him, and I'm sure he knows the count and the kind of pitch he threw to him. But what'd you take away from the chat?
Well, quite a bit. It was, you know, you said you hadn't seen him. I'd seen him last year, and I've seen him a lot this year, but it was the first chance I'd had to talk to him because, you know, he was 4-0 last year. He started 4-0 in his first five starts with Cebu this year, and he was in demand. He was like a TV guy. No, sorry, I got to go. I got TV to do. And even before we spoke, he was doing a little TV thing on the field. So
that's true. Yeah, we had to wait for him.
We did have to wait for him, and you know, when you got star quality, you know, you just got to deal with that. And what did I take out of it? A couple of things. I did like the mention. I thought it was interesting that he mentioned pitching with a lead.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lions have scored 6 1/3 runs per game that he started.
Six plus.
Yeah, 6.33 and on and on. They're 7-1-1 in those games, which is about what you'd expect, or maybe you'd expect them to be 8-1. The one tie, they tied somebody 8-8.
I think
anyway,
that was the Swallows, right? Swallows came back to tie it late, and
right. Okay.
And that's a way.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
So anyway, and he said they scored early, so I have a new toy on my database I made the other day, so I have a searchable box score. So I plug in Wolf's name as the starting pitcher, and I plug in an inning, you know, how many runs they scored in the first or the second. So I got the games where they scored in the first and second for him, and he had a 2-0 lead after 2, 5-0 lead after 3, 2-0 lead after 1. 3-0 lead in the top of the first, 4-0 through the top of the third. Huh. I mean, he wasn't kidding.
No, you can relax.
and what I would comment about that a little bit later, but I did a study some years ago about the effect of pitchers when they have a lot of runs behind them and when they don't. And it was about a half a run difference in ERA.
Right.
when you get a lot of runs, the pitchers tended, and it was just a little exploratory study, so I wouldn't put a lot of faith in it, but it was something you'd kind of expect. When pitchers aren't under pressure, they tend to pitch better.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was the thing I was most interested in. I guess that, and because we've talked so much about the shortstop and so on, and Ohtani, and I brought back up the joke about, you know, the Pacific League pitchers petitioning Nippon Ham to, you know, to get Ohtani to do the right thing and become a pitcher. And forget about that. Yeah, forget about that batting nonsense.
Put down that stick and stop beating us with it.
That, well, no. It's all for his good that he should be the best pitcher in Japan, so he should focus on that alone.
Well, the thing that struck me, I guess, because there were a lot of things, but it struck me as very interesting, is particularly after, because we talked to some Giants players and they were in this horrible losing streak, and we'll talk about that later, but he said that, you know, he's enjoying the game with this extra life.
Mm.
And that just, you know, after the interview, that kind of stuck in my head. And then, of course, I go back and put it together and send you a copy. And I listened again. And that really stood out for me, because for somebody to enjoy the game on a team that obviously wants to win and has a lot of pride, and you put you put that dynamic into perspective with, you know, the fans, you're going out there to perform, you're doing something you like, but if you make a couple of mistakes or if things don't go your way, you can get booed, you know, or you could get thrown into, you could get sent to the farm team. You're supposed to be enjoying your work, and I know it's work, and I know it's a game at the same time, so there's that strange dynamic, these forces that are pulling at each other, because you're supposed to be having fun, but then again, you're getting paid a lot of money to do it. And there's a lot of pressure because people spend their time and their money to come and watch you do your job. But, you know, wins and losses aside, when he said he's out there and he's relaxed and he has this extra life, I found that pretty profound for a guy who's, you know, he's making some good money, obviously, and doing something that a lot of people would love to do. I mean, I always joke and tease about how the experts of the game are the guys watching. Because we think we know everything.
Well, we don't we?
So this was refreshing, you know, for me to hear. And I know teams and the fans want to support the players and everything, but it's really hard when you also want them to win, and you think that somebody's not doing a good job, or that they look like they're not doing their best or something like that. But I think Brian's doing a good job, and he's having fun, and you know, he's pitching. We're talking on Sunday morning here, and he's going to be pitching later today. So by the time you guys hear this, he will have thrown already today for the first time in a while, because he's coming back off of, off of a rest, let's say. And he's got that oblique issue, and hopefully he can pitch okay and be fine through it. But I know that's a tough situation, because every which way you try to pitch, that thing's gonna hurt. So we'll see how that goes. And then obviously for me, when he said with Genda, and I asked that follow-up question about the shortstop Sosuke Genda, with them being all over him in camp, I didn't know what that meant. And it looks like, or it sounds to me like, he's their third pick in the draft, so it's not like they went for him right away. But I think they thought, here's a guy who went to college and played in the corporate leagues and is coming in at 24. So it's not like he's this unknown quantity that they don't have video on and don't have a lot of, didn't do a lot of research on. They've got a lot of data for him in terms of, you know, scouts, what they can do and how they can view him. So I think they really wanted him to be the number one guy at short, and there was no doubt about it, and that's why they were all over him.
Well, I think you're correct. And when they say all over him, I think what they meant was they had all this video and they watched him and they said, no, you got to do it this way. Knowing Japanese baseball, you know, you do this well, but you got to do this way. Or, you know, they picked on some specific things they wanted him to work on. I guess the other thing, a couple of things I'd mention about your comments. Yeah, I was thinking about that having an extra life, and you know, it's perfect for a pitcher because, you know, you can say he's got extra life on his pitches. And the other thing is, you said that, you know, the team playing for a team that wants to win. Well, you know, basically you know, there's I won't say this year, but in the past there's been 11 teams that wanted to win an NPB. So that's pretty much the norm. But I think that the next point is there are teams that are paranoid about losing. Okay. Japanese baseball is largely about, to be fair or to be objective, is more about not losing than winning.
Mm.
And the two of the teams in NPB are just hideous at that. The Lions being, I guess, one of the more positive teams. I hadn't heard that because I know the Lions organization has been held up to me by people who would know as being one of the more conservative ones in NPB.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't like things to go wrong. You know, I'm surprised that on the field that doesn't translate. But yeah, but I hear you. Having fun is huge. And I guess the other one is I was surprised that he didn't really, you know, I get ground balls. I don't notice the defense is any better or worse, really. But that kind of interested me because I find pitchers to be really in tune or really focused on how good the defense is behind them. But I guess if you're having fun and you're focused on what you're doing, it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, I mean, what he said, what I took away from that was when he mentioned the fact that he pitches at a quick tempo,
mm-hmm.
and that he didn't waste time between pitches. And maybe he was suggesting that some of the other pitchers were taking too much time between pitches and letting their defenders' minds wander. And that's why they ended up having trouble with the defense behind him, but that he was throwing at such a quick tempo that it didn't seem to impact him as much, is what I took away from it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's
I don't know who's the slowest guy out there on the mound between pitches. I haven't paid attention.
I know there are there are guys in Japan who, you know, work quickly. There are Japanese guys who work quickly even. But yeah, I'm not going to go down that road. All I'm going to say is that I haven't, you know, that's sort of a common belief. You pitch quickly and your defense gets better. I don't know. It's one of those things that sounds like it should be true, but very likely isn't.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that we can say very likely. I can just say that I know that guys' minds wander. They start to think about their last at bat or their next at bat, and you don't want them thinking about anything except if the ball is hit to them, where are they going to go, who's running, just essentially where to go with the ball and how to turn that batted ball into an out quickly.
Well, I'm gonna point out something that I think what we're talking about, okay, if first of all, it might not necessarily be true at all. And two, if it is, it's more like something like the advantage that veteran hitters have over young hitters in situational hitting is that, you know, it's not that they're a huge difference, but it's a tiny difference, you know, that they exploit the situation slightly better.
Okay.
And that it could be a very, very, very tiny thing. But on the other hand, if you're a pitcher, you know, if you're a baseball player, you live for tiny things. And I don't want to demean them, but I mean, if your baseball team lives on all these tiny, tiny, tiny little edges over their competition. So every advantage is huge, regardless how tiny.
Gotcha. All right. Now, talking about the Lions, I like, all things considered, I like where they are. I mean, Shogo Akiyama,
yeah.
He's really tearing it up. I don't know. I mean, he set the single season hit mark 2 years ago, and right now he's second on the team in hits behind Hideto Asamura. And that guy is banging the ball as well. Considering Ernesto Mejia he's hitting more human-like. He's not bashing the ball over the fence as much, but his average is a little bit higher than it usually is. They're still running guys out there to play different positions. Yuji Kaneko has been in and out of the lineup, mostly in recently.
Right field is essentially their platoon position.
Yeah. Shotaro Tashiro, he's been mm-hmm. in. Shuta Tonosaki, who recently this week, just battered the Giants. They're mixing and matching some places here. Asamura, like I said, is really stepping up his game. Takeya Okawari Nakamura has been productive while getting the appropriate amount of rest, I would say, because I do think he needs to be rested here and there because, he can break down, I think, if he plays too much. Mm. They lost on Friday in the ninth inning on a two-run home run by Toshiro Miyazaki off of Tatsushi Masuda, the closer. Mm-hmm. They lost to DeNA, but those things happen once in a while. I don't think Masuda is the greatest closer, and that could be expected to happen once in a while. But the bullpen has been pretty good. Brian Schlitter, whom I didn't get a chance to talk to, but he's provided some adequate relief in whatever role they've been putting him in. They do tend to struggle sometimes in the bullpen when they go to games that they're trailing, or maybe if they have to go to middle relief.
Mm-hmm.
But even without Shin Saburo, Tawata, and Kona Takahashi, I think they're doing well. They're nine games over 500, and they're in third place.
Yeah, I think the comment I was going to make is about their pitchers. I've noticed something with the Lions pitchers, and with a couple of teams' pitchers this year.
Mm-hmm.
What I've noticed is, Yusei Kikuchi's been on that continued track he's been on for a couple of years, just getting gradually better and better.
Yeah, I didn't leave him out. I mean, he's finally turned into the guy I think they expected to see maybe 4 years ago, but it has taken 8 years. But anyway, it doesn't matter how long you get there, as long as you get there. He's only 26. I think he's going to be, by the time we have our next show, he'll be 26.
Wow, happy birthday. And the comment I wanted to make was not really about him, but about their second tier starters. Because, the game that night, I watched Yosuke Okamoto, who's been a really nothing pitcher throughout his career.
And all of a sudden he was a star against the skating Giants.
Well, he wasn't a star, and he didn't, and I was thinking, what a mismatch. Here's a guy who's got really nothing. And, he's got a kind of a slow, flat fastball, and he's got a fork ball that was pretty good, and he's got a couple of breaking balls. And he wasn't throwing them. They're not really good. Not a lot of movement, but he was basically locating and trying to throw his pitches and trying to work within the area around the strike zone.
Right.
And here's one of the things is that when you're, and I've noticed this with the Carp pitchers, and I mentioned this about Alan Curry and Yuta Nakamura, one of their rookies, that if you do that, if you're consistently focused about getting the ball around the strike zone and in the strike zone,
mm-hmm.
and locating it, you can do a lot of damage when things aren't going well. Now, Okamoto wasn't that good against the Giants, and he had some, it was weird because the Giants, he threw a lot of fat pitches, they didn't hit well. But on the other hand, his best pitches seemed to get hit, get really good swings on them. So, it was sort of a glass being half full or half empty. But the point being that, what Wolf said is, I think, true. When you have a team, you expect to score runs, and the Carp guys have told me this, and Brad Eldred said this, and the Carp pitchers have told me this, when you expect your team to score runs, you're not trying to be too fine. You're much more focused on executing and being aggressive, making the batters get themselves out.
Right.
And I don't mean like by swinging at pitches in the dirt, but I mean by, giving them something they can swing at and not going 3-0 in the count because you're afraid to pitch to them.
Right.
Okay. Right. But that was, and I think I've seen that with a lot of the Lions, Yoma Nogami and Ken Togame are in that group,
mm-hmm.
and they're pitchers who have some quality and they have some pitches, but not a lot to work with compared to other guys, not a lot of speed, but they've looked much better this year in the sense of, not always be good, but being able to put it together often enough to keep the team from sinking half the times they start.
Right. I mean, and those two guys are a perfect example. They don't have great stuff. I think Togame seems to be, he's got that funky motion and, he's so low with his back when he finishes and everything. But I think Tawata has the same kind or similar kind of delivery. And It's just about executing for those guys. They throw hard enough that they can make an impact with their fastball, and then if they can locate the other pitches, then they can be effective. And the nights that they make mistakes, sometimes they get hit, you know, and that's the way it goes. But
sometimes they don't, as was the case with the Giants, where they need to make a transition.
Yeah, so I want to talk about Interleague really quickly. And did you see the matchups this week or this weekend where the matchups basically were perfectly in line with the standings, meaning it was first versus first and second versus second in each league all the way through from top to bottom?
That's correct. Yeah. I hadn't noticed it except for all the way across the board. But yeah, the weekday matches the weekend matches were all the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like what the Carp are doing. Oryx coming, I wouldn't say coming out of nowhere. They've tended to play well in Interleague. And it's very fortunate that they got the Dragons this particular weekend, who are really not looking to win. And they keep proving it by sending pitchers out there who they want to develop instead of trying to get outs. And I think the perfect example was on Saturday when the rookie Yuya Yanagi was sent out to throw the eighth inning when clearly in the seventh inning he was throwing some tired pitches. And so they did, you know, after he didn't get the first two batters out and then got a sacrifice, they took him out and in comes Junki Ito. And I thought, oh, well, they're not trying to win this game either. And a couple pitches later, they weren't. So, I like what the Carp are doing. You and I both had them finishing as the top Central League teams team, and at the moment they are the top Central League team. But you look at the standings, and it's like I think five Central League teams are in the bottom half of these
below 500
in these interleague standings.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
and it's just so sad.
It's pretty normal. I mean, that there's only four of them at least. Yeah. So that, you know, the Tigers and the Carp are doing well and the other four teams aren't, which is about typical. Usually it's one team's doing well and one's 500 and the rest are sunk.
Yeah, I did say five teams. Yeah, it's only four. It just seems like five.
Yeah.
But the PL is 39 and 26 against the CL so far in Interleague. It's just not even close. It's just so sad.
It's pretty much an annual. I mean, and it's not.
It is. But this is really bad.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, and I really think, although people have laughed at my assertion, I think there is an advantage.
They don't just laugh, Jim. They scoff.
They scoff. Okay, well, there's been some scoffage.
Don't sell them short. These people are working out there.
There's been some serious scoffage and some disrespecting by saying that leagues with a DH have an advantage in interleague play.
Okay.
But if you look at the, and again, there's not a lot of evidence, but if you look at the records in interleague play of the Pacific League and the American League in MLB, they're almost identical over time. It's not a huge advantage, but it's a consistent advantage. So I don't know if that bears out or not. I was going to do a study, but ran out of time today. But anyway, I'll leave it there. But yeah, it's pretty much the normal thing. I think Oryx, obviously, if they played in the Central League, they'd probably be a pennant contender every year.
Every year, yeah, it seems like it. So they are 9-2 as we go into games today, and SoftBank and Hiroshima are 8-3. Cebu at 7-3-1, and then Hanshin at 7-4. So I'm gonna hold out hope that the Carp can make a move. They've been looking really good. Hopefully they can pull up there. But you know, here we are talking about SoftBank possibly in position to win another interleague session here or interleague race. So yeah, interesting. You know, I'm gonna keep
an eye on it.
I'm just hoping that the Yakult Swallows can win a game.
Yeah. Yep.
It might be today. They've got David Buchanan going up against Chihaya Sasaki, the rookie for the Chiba Lotte Marines.
Yeah.
He has pitched well. David Buchanan has.
He hasn't. He's pretty much a, you know, put the ball in play guy. So as we spoke to him earlier this year, and so when they, you know, when the ball goes in the right place, he can be really, the results can be really impressive.
Okay. All right, now making a four-seam transition, I want to talk about something you hinted about last week and didn't have time to actually delve into very much. And you were mentioning we talked about Masahiro Araki of the Dragons reaching his 2000th hit mm-hmm. in his career, and you mentioned that 17 of the past 48 players who have gotten 2,000 hits have done it in the past 10 years.
Right. They've all been active players the past 10 years.
Okay. Or, I'm sorry, yeah, that's the way you okay, work, have been
yeah,
active.
Right.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong.
I believe they all did it within the last 10 years because you do it tend to be at the end of your career, yeah.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you hinted the achievement has been sort of cheapened. Is that what I was sensing?
I wouldn't say cheapened. I'm just saying it's a little bit like inflation, you know.
Inflation.
A dollar isn't worth what it is now when we were kids.
Right.
Right, is what I'm saying is that essentially, I'm saying the reason we have 17 guys, you know, more than a third of the guys, and it's going to be closer to 40% by the end of the season in the last 10 years is because it's relatively, it's more likely to get it now. I won't say it's easier, but the conditions of the game have changed.
Yeah, and I started to think, and I know that you know the history of the game and that you know, there were obviously fewer games per season back in the old days. And anyway, what I did was...
Well, that's a big thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I know the number of games is a big deal, and so you get to compare a lot. But the NPB site has all the Meikyukai, and that's the mm-hmm. Golden Players Club guys up, and it has them listed the year that they... reached the 2000th hit mm-hmm. and it has all the stuff. So as I was looking through there, I noticed something and I had this idea in my head, but I wanted to go there and look and see if it was true. And did you notice? You noticed the ages of the guys who early on reached 2000 hits. They were mostly in their 30s.
Mm.
And now we're seeing guys closer to 40.
Yeah.
Reaching this goal. In fact, of the past 10 guys, I think more of them have been closer to either 40 or older to reach the 2,000 hits club. So
I think that's true. I think that is true because I understand you're talking about the players have longer careers now.
Exactly.
And I think that's true too. I think that's an influence. And another thing I would say that one of the reasons the guys reached it earlier at younger ages before a lot of them did
uh-huh.
is because the game's changed. You used to be the difference in the game, you know, it's looking at Japanese baseball now and Japanese baseball, let's say in 1957, 60 years ago
uh-huh.
is much like looking at MLB and NPB.
All right, so I've looked at a lot of the past, I don't know, I think 10 guys, and of them, here are the ages, 39, 39, 42, 42, 39, 38, 40, 41, 39. And then the youngest of the group in the 10 was Michihiro Ogasawara, who did it at 37.
Mm.
So what I thought was, okay, we're getting guys, and it's my word, I like to use compilers, and a lot of guys who just, they have longevity in the game. You look at the games played, it's, you know, around 2,000-something games played.
Yep.
And so that's a difference because early on it was guys who were, you know, I think the guy who played the fewest games was like somewhere in the 1600s. And that's a lot fewer games, so he was a lot younger.
Mm.
So what I started to think was, well, maybe we just have a situation where we've got all these nutritionists, we've got all these trainers, sports medicine has grown. When I started in 1980-something, getting into sports writing, one of my first stories was about a sports medicine trainer and what it took to get into that. And that's back in the 80s. So maybe we're seeing all this work on the nutrition and the bodies. And, you know, you see guys who, if they work hard, they can continue to play and be productive at a late age, let's say, you know, beyond 35. And that is allowing these guys who are, who have these kinds of, they're regimented, they're in shape, they can stand out above some of the other guys, and they can be productive for a long time and reach these goals. So what I was thinking is maybe this 2000 hit scenario, it's time for us to slide the scale a little bit.
Well, I think you're right. I think the health issue is one. I think the playing conditions are a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are not playing doubleheaders every Sunday like they did in NPB until pretty much the late 70s.
Right.
They weren't playing, fought three doubleheaders in a row as they would because of all the makeup games at the end of the year because of the dome stadium. They're playing indoors. They got Mondays off. The travel is much more efficient. They're not inhaling exhaust gases from steam locomotives.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things. Another thing is that I think there's several reasons. I don't know which is the most influential. The other point, as I said, is that most of these guys have the opportunity to play more games because there's more games in a year. NPB for ages had a 130 game schedule, and now they play 143, which is exactly 10% more.
Mm-hmm.
Another difference is that in the 50s and 60s, offensive levels were much lower.
Right. I know that you know more about that than I do, obviously, okay. and that whole, so I didn't want to get into as to why, but I just looked at the ages and the number of games.
And I think the other thing, and I think that you alluded to before, it was a lot of young guys, is because the talent base in NPB used to be a lot thinner. And so the guys who were at the top, they towered over the guys. What you've seen in NPB is guys used to have two or three guys who led the league every year in everything.
Right, right. And I would say that those guys were elite athletes, probably.
Sure, sure.
But now we're seeing guys, and I'm looking at the list, and we're seeing a bunch of guys who were nowhere near elite in terms of their athleticism. We're seeing guys, Shinya Miyamoto was a really good guy.
You sound like he lent you some money.
Yeah, it was. Motonobu Tanishige is a really good guy. Takahiro Arai, Alex Ramirez. These are not elite athletically players. These are just guys who
they're really good players, but they're not the upper
echelon of
right. No, I hear you, and that's what I'm saying is before there was the people who were at the top, it was almost a cinch they'd get 2,000 hits. It was automatic, and now it's automatic because if you play long enough, you can get it. Before it was automatic because you were just the best. The elite were so much better than the norm, the median. The median is shorter here, but. And I think the other reason, everybody doesn't get 2,000 hits, obviously everybody can't be above average. But, the other thing on the other side, although the offensive context is higher, we also have specialty relievers, which makes it more difficult than it used to be. You're not facing. The whole pitching thing is to say to I can't characterize it in one paragraph, but I think basically there's a lot of things that makes it easier for that second tier group of players. Before mm-hmm. there were no second tier, the number of second tier players who could survive long enough, without major surgery that wasn't available to them.
That's right. Medicine has improved.
Sure.
I mean, there's so many.
So anyway, I think that's so. It's probably I think in a number of those factors. I mean, it might be game inflation, but I hadn't really thought about the aging bit until you looked at the ages. But I think that's really germane to the issue.
Yep. All right. no way to make a transition into this, so we will just skip all that. The Yomiuri Giants set a franchise record for consecutive losses on Wednesday, and that's the night that we did the Brian Wolf interview, and they went on to lose 13 consecutive games before ending the skid against the Fighters 2-1 on Friday, and that was Miles Michaelis throwing an 8-inning, 1-run gem, basically, for them. And the previous manager to lose many games was Shigeo Nagashima. So he's an adored figure in Giants baseball lore. Mm. And so the current manager, Yoshinobu Takahashi, is not as high up on that hierarchy of famed Giants players, but he's still adored. He still has enough of a pull with the fans so that even if people want his head for this, it's not likely to happen. And I talked to some of the Giants guys while we were out there, some Giants reporters, some Giants players. You and I spoke with Scott Matheson. But it just seems like they were grasping at straws. They sent the closer Archimedes Caminero to the farm team for absolutely no reason. I thought maybe he had some kind of injury, but that wasn't the case. I know they wanted to bring up Luis Cruz to play second base, and I was talking to Jason Koskrie recently, and I said, look, you got to pick something, the defense or some offense. And I said, just go with Cruz and let him hit what he hits, and don't worry about it. But you've got to play better defense at second base. And
well, first of all, for the last, pretty much since 2002, and since Tatsunori Hara became manager of the Giants in 2002, the Yomiuri's perception of second base is the position that nobody's good enough to play.
Yeah, they've got their problems. So
they do.
Yeah, they got their issues. So they broke the streak, but then they lost on Saturday night. So I don't know. This team, it was very – the one thing that I watched as the players warmed up and as we spoke with Scott and as we talked to Luis Cruz a little bit, is there's just this dark cloud hanging over the franchise right now. I don't know. I can't put a finger on it, but I know that we were told that fans were calling up and complaining, and they're getting a lot of hate mail. And then I talked to somebody at our office, and they said, look, the Giants, this is not just the Giants baseball team. The newspaper is getting complaints. Mm. People will stop taking the newspaper.
Yeah, they'll cancel their subscriptions.
They'll cancel the subscriptions because the Giants aren't winning. Mm. This could be an economic breakdown.
Yep, and that's why, as I mentioned, there are two teams that essentially the Giants and the Tigers, which are another team that's equally infamous for being swayed by the media. It's all, you know, I often joke that essentially the team's run by the Daily Sports, the Osaka-based sports paper. But right. The Giants are, you know, there's a story a former Giants player told me about the team's general manager coming into the locker room in 2011 and saying, and this guy was hitting 228, and he said, the general manager came in and says, I'm not going to name names, but we can't allow a player on our team to hit 228.
All right, so yeah, I mean, here's my whole thing is, I mean, they're disappointed. This is an economic tragedy that's unfolding in front of us, possibly. Mm. But they're the ones that got themselves into this mess. They took Yoshinobu off the field and put him behind the bench,
As opposed to hiring a qualified manager.
Exactly. And what does he offer? He offers nothing emotionally. He's not a motivator. He's not a cheerleader. He's not a screamer. He doesn't do anything.
Well, he stays calm.
He's the strong, silent type.
Yeah, which has, as you know, he stays cool, which is not always easy to do.
And he stays too cool because I don't think he was emotionally structured, or that his emotional makeup is not the kind that warrants a person who can get a team out of a losing streak.
Well, I don't know.
Because if things are going okay, he's fine. But when things start to go bad, he's still fine. He doesn't do anything. You know,
things are always
there's
going
no sense
wrong.
Of urgency.
Things are always going wrong on a baseball team, and it's really a matter of knowing when it's a problem and when it's not a problem, which nobody really knows, I don't think.
Well, I totally understand, but I think the whole team lacked that passionate leader. I mean, you look on the field, Sakamoto is the captain. He's not a passionate leader. Abe was the captain. He probably is more of an ogre. more of a Takashi Yamazaki type who gets mad at his at the players in the locker room but doesn't show it on the field. Hisayoshi Chono is so lost in his own, he's covered in his own muck that he can't see straight, so he's not going to be leadership. And there's nobody on the field to take charge. Who's the guy out there who's going to take charge? No one. Even on the bench, the manager doesn't even take charge. And I think that's part of the problem. I think they need a guy who's, they need that vocal leader once in a while who's going to stand up and say, hey, this is what, we need to do the right thing. Let's make sure we do the right thing. If you don't, you know, I don't want to see your face tomorrow, you know, something like that. I don't know what it takes. I don't know what it takes, but I just know that they lack passion.
Well, let's just, I'm going to do a Jim Comey hearing thing on you. Well, you don't know what it takes, but it hasn't stopped you from saying it.
No, I don't know what it takes to get a team out of a skid like this.
Right.
But I think I do see a lack of passion.
Okay, but I'm saying that, well, lack of passion, lack of being angry is two different things.
They're different. I'm not saying you have to be angry, but I do want to see some passion. When things don't go right, I want to see somebody get mad about it. Somebody, all I see is disappointment.
That is fair. Well, Scott said an interesting thing is the team expects them to be gentlemen on the field. This team has asked, the Giants organization has asked them to be silent on the field, essentially, to be, you know, are just joyful with success and, you know, and have a stiff upper lip.
Well, I'm not going to say that being angry is not gentlemanly, but I think there's ways of showing and venting your passion in a manner that isn't threatening, if that's what they mean.
I think a bigger problem is that many Giant former Giants foreign players have told me that basically the Giants do their best to suck all the life out of their team by suck all the joy out of playing baseball by saying this is how we have to act on the field, this is how we have to appear.
Hashtag
we have a role, you know, we have an image to protect, and we're out there to sell an image, not to play baseball. And then don't lose, because losing is the worst thing in the world, and it will kill us.
Yeah, well, it'll somebody, you know, and I tweeted, somebody's going to have to go. And I was talking to my boss the other day, and she said the same thing, that somebody, whether it's going to be, and it won't be anybody, you know, directly involved on the team, it might be the PR guy or something like that, but somebody's going to have to change.
Well, that's a joyful thought, actually.
Okay.
There's an area of utmost joy.
Well, staying with joy, let's talk about some rookies who are contributing to their teams this season. We've talked about Sosuke Gendo in the PL, the shortstop with the Lions, and I tell you what, the thing I really like about him, which I you know, you heard good things about him in camp, and I had expectations, but I tell you what I really like about him is his speed. He leads the PL with 17 stolen bases and has 5 triples. And this kid, I mean, you know, I'd like to see he and Louis Okoye in a race, because they're really, really fast. And it's really fun to watch this kid. I saw him turn a double into a triple earlier this year. So I really like what he's doing. And I think he's a big reason as to why the Lions are in third place and looking good.
Yeah, and I think part of that is, yeah, he... I said, you know, having a regular shortstop is important, but that goes both ways. I mean, you know, you have to have somebody who's good enough to play every day and who can deal with the ups and downs positively.
Mm-hmm.
And as a rookie, that's probably, I want to say, it seems like it would be harder. Maybe he doesn't know, you know, maybe he doesn't know enough to be scared.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, last year, for the last couple of years, the Lions couldn't decide who their shortstop was going to be. I mean, it was pretty horrible. And to go back to the Giants, it was like second base. You know, they've just decided that they can't win without a good second baseman. So let's change them every day. So it's not... it hasn't killed them in the past, but they've got nothing to show for all their efforts. You kind of
you know, let somebody grow into it and deal with the ups and downs. And the Giants, and I think the Lions under Tanabe were not good enough with dealing with ups and downs. And the Giants have never been able to handle any sort of downs at second base, except, you know, make an error. Almost, I wonder, you know, if you make an error at second base for the Giants or you strike out three times in a game, do they just hand you the, you know, hand you the slip saying we've already cleaned your locker out and moved it to Kawasaki for the farm team?
Right. But this kid is, I mean, he's little, but he's doing a good job. Now on the mound, I like, and I know there are lots of guys out there, but I think I'm going to go with Taisuke Yamaoka of the Oryx Buffaloes, and we didn't get to talk about him that much last week, but he's only 2-4. He's got a good ERA. He's thrown a good number of innings, maybe not as many as you'd like to see.
I erased him from my list actually, but he was the third on a 3-man list of pitchers.
Yeah, and I like him because I just think he's steady. I mean, he's another diminutive guy. But he throws hard for his size. He keeps the team in the games. They've thrown him out there trying to get him a win late in games when he was probably tired and he ended up with a couple of losses. So I think that's got to be taken into consideration with the win-loss record. But his ERA is really decent for a first-year guy, and I think if he keeps his spot in the rotation, I think he's going to develop as a pitcher, so I like him.
The two guys I had him, the two guys I liked a little better, one of them is his teammate, Yuta Kuroki.
Yep, we talked about him last year. Yep.
Who's
last week.
Last week, right. He finished that rookie relay, and he's got a 0.90 whip and striking out 9.8 batters per 9 innings.
Yep.
Which is about what you want to see from a reliever. And now here's another guy.
He leads the league in holds with 17. Yep.
Another guy which people might not notice because he's a guy who's been around a while on the developmental roster is Shuta Ishikawa of the SoftBank Hawks. This guy's a starting pitcher. Now he's a starter. He was thrown into the starting rotation the other day because the Hawks have been doing, you know, trying out starting pitchers. But he's got a 1.12 whip and he's got 10.3 Ks per 9 innings.
Right.
So I like him.
Check that. Kuroki leads the team in holds with 14, so not the league, but he's close. Yeah.
Okay. And the other guy I like is that. But I'll say this: that if I listed the best rookies, you look at the best rookies, most of them are in the Pacific League.
True. Yeah.
True. I mean, there's a couple in Central.
But the guys who look like they're going to develop, and that's the guys I'm focusing on.
And okay, and the other guy, Sosuke Genda's kind of his twin, is Yota Kyoda.
Yeah, he's on my list, and that's in the Central League with the Dragons.
And I like him even better than I like Sosuke Genda.
I don't, and I tell you why. Genda's listed at 179 centimeters or 1.79 meters and 73 kilograms, right?
Right.
Kyoda is listed at 180 centimeters. Or 1.80 meters and 80 kilograms. And I think Genda plays bigger. Okay. I've seen so many times when Kyoda, the ball, he just doesn't reach a ball or it's hit over his head.
Mm.
He just plays small. Okay. I haven't watched him play.
Yeah. As a hitter, he's a step ahead. Yeah. And playing in a tough hitter's park. Tough park for hitters. Yeah, I would say he's ahead offensively. He had a really nice, he got red hot a couple of weeks ago, so that he's probably about at his maximum. But yeah, so those two guys, I don't think there's too much competition going to be for, unless some rookie pitcher comes out and wins 5 games in the second half of the season.
Yeah. Well, you said it though. They're twins. They both hit. They bat left and throw right, and they're both really fast. And I think Kyoda is putting together some really big quality at-bats for that team and doing well as a leadoff hitter. He's made people forget about Naomichi Donoue.
Yeah, and Shuhei Takahashi. I mean, the Dragons, well, of course, when you're losing,
if you're out of the lineup for too long, boy, they'll forget you in a heartbeat.
Yeah, well, he's forgotten. And then the pitcher I like in the Central League is Tomoyo Hoshi of the Yakult Swallows, a right-handed pitcher. What I really like about him is if he stays healthy and he continues to develop, he can control the strike zone with his fastball. And if he gets those secondary pitches where he can compete with them more consistently, in the strike zone, I think he has a lot of room to grow, and I think he can be dominant. But because he just throws so hard. But I think they have to continue use him as a starter.
He's got learning to do.
He's got a lot of learning to do, but when you're striking out
five guys in nine innings, you got some work to do. But he does, as I said, he does throw hard. He looks like he's really smooth, and I do like what I've seen from him. So, yeah, it's not unusual for pitchers to strike out more in their second year. So that's possible. I don't really like any of the rookie pitchers in the Central League. So
take that. Yeah. Keep working, Rooks.
Yeah, I guess.
All right, a couple of notes. Takahiro Norimoto of the Rakuten Eagles extended his streak with double-digit strikeouts to 8. And an 8-2 victory over DeNA this past week. And, geez, he just continues to look really good. I guess, I don't know, the guys, he's tied the Major League record now. And the Major League record is held by Chris Sale, who actually did it last month. Mm-hmm. He reached 8 consecutive games last month. And then Pedro Martinez. So if he does this for a 9th consecutive game, this is going to be really something.
And it's, I don't say anything. Okay, let's just move on.
Okay. And then also Yuki Yanagita of the SoftBank Hawks had his consecutive games hit streak stopped at 21. Mm-hmm. And this was on Saturday. Koyo Aoyagi of the Tigers was the starting pitcher who pretty much shut him down. So that was, I was looking forward to him doing some damage. He had a ball that he hit towards shortstop, and it didn't clear the infield. It was a line drive that didn't get out of the infield. So I think that was his best chance. But I didn't see the entire game. I just saw parts of it. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we have an MP3, another one, and we appreciate him, and especially with Max in LA. What a voice, huh?
Yep, I want it.
I want it.
I want that voice.
Just pack it, package it.
No more squeaky, Wayne nasally, Wayne Grassick stuff for me, baby. Give me that voice. Give me that Leon Lee baritone, baby.
Well, you guys just have to have a vocal exchange there.
The kind that you don't see with the Omiuri Giants. Okay.
Right. All right, here's Max's question.
Hi, Jim and John. My question for you guys this week concerns the farm system in Japan, more specifically dealing with foreign players that get signed. More specifically than that, I'm talking about younger foreign players that are signed to farm teams in Japan. For example, Xavier Bautista and Alejandro Mejia of the Hiroshima Carp are not only leading the Western League, but all of I guess the Western and Eastern League in batting average. Xavier Bautista also has 14 home runs and 38 RBIs, which lead all of the farm in NPB. So with foreign players, like for example, SoftBank signed 2 young pitching prospects out of Cuba about a week or two ago. And what's the goal of NPB signing young foreign players like that? Is it to develop them for their own usage, or is it to develop them so that they can go play in the major leagues? I know back in the late 90s, the Carp had Alfonso Soriano and Timo Perez, who eventually got their start playing in the farm system for the Carp, but then went on to play in Major League Baseball. So my question is, what is the purpose of developing young foreign talent in the NPB farm system? Thank you guys for your answer.
All right. So, Interesting question, especially, and we got this last week and we weren't able to get to it. In fact, we're going to blow through it right now today anyway, but he brings up some interesting points.
He does, and I want to say it's, they're certainly not developing these guys so they can go back to the States and play baseball.
That is not the purpose, yes.
No, and I think...
please don't think that at all.
Right, I mean, it has happened because they haven't... The guys, Soriano... Well, the Carp wanted to keep him, but he didn't want to stay, and that was before the posting system. So he basically quit and left.
Mm-hmm.
Because the long story, you'll have to ask Bob Whiting about that or read Meaning of Ichiro or the previous one. You got to have Waugh to learn about that one. But no, they're ideally they're developing them so they can do what they did a week ago with Xavier Batista, which is give the guy a long-term contract that's worth nothing. Well, I don't say it's worth nothing, but it's worth essentially in dollars, it's a $40,000 a year. No, it's a $47,000 a year contract.
Yeah, I did see the number somewhere and I thought,
right. Yeah. Now there's I did a story actually, Claudio Rodriguez in Toronto said it was a good story by me. It was a good story by me, although the kernel of it was a translation, so I didn't put my byline on it. But I did mention that in NPB, if you're on the first team roster in NPB, your salary is prorated to about three times, about more than double what he's making now.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be as bad, but yeah.
Peanuts.
Yeah, peanuts, exactly. But this guy was, as he said, this guy, Batista and Mejia have been ripping up the Western League. And the Western League is not an easy league for hitters. So, yeah, those two guys, the Carp opponents should be very scared for the next 5 years.
Well, what I was thinking early on was, okay, who do the Carp have and why would they not bring in a guy up who's hitting, you know, he's tearing up the league, and what position does he play? Mm. And you look at Batista, he's listed as an infielder, but they had him playing in the outfield, they had him playing left field.
Well, he's primarily been an outfielder. I don't know why he'd be listed as an infielder, but yeah.
He's listed among their infielders, yeah, on their, he is. He's the last, he's number 95, he's the last on among the infielders. So yeah,
okay.
I did see that the other day when
okay.
I was
addressing. But he is an outfielder. And he can come up because they have room in the outfield. Not a lot. I mean, you know, they've got Brad Eldred and they've got Matsuyama in left, and now they've got Batista in left. And if he just keeps doing what he's doing, we're never going to see the Carp being the Carp, Matsuyama's going to get to play. But his playing time is going to be seriously curtailed because who would want, you know, a guy who's 29 who's seen his chances go. Not for his own doing, but, you know, he's run out of chances and have a 25-year-old who's killing the ball.
Right. And so I thought, okay, well, you've got Chris Johnson who's going to be coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Brad Eldred. You've got Jay Jackson. And you've got Brian Brashear.
Brashear.
And obviously Brashear had been contributing, but not that much. And
Braden Higgins is still on the farm.
Higgins is still there. And it was a matter of who they're going to bring up and when and where they're going to play them. Because obviously Tomohiro Abe has been playing well at third. So you can't just throw anybody. It was a hard decision, I think. And that's why it took so long for them to make it. And I still think they're just looking and shaking their heads. This is great production, but what are we going to do here? And as long as everybody stays healthy, I don't think... Brad Eldred at first and Batista in left is a bad situation.
No.
On a daily basis. I think that's good.
No, and they're gonna, you know, and Eldred will sit and Arraya will play a little bit, and Eldred will play in the outfield now and then to make sure he can still play in the outfield. Matsuyama, because you know what the Carp do is they don't worry about too much about who has to start, except for Kikuchi and Morrow.
Right.
And Kosuke Tanaka. Even Abe, they're sort of like going, well, you're kind of a spindly little guy. You're not the guy we really want at third base. I know you're leading the league in hitter and you're a good offensive player and you play really good defense. But, you know, we're really looking for somebody to hit home runs. So, you know, okay, we're good with you for now.
We're good with you for now until you don't hit mm-hmm. or you do something. Yeah,
yeah, their confidence level in Abe is kind of disappointing. But their whole thing is everybody on this team is playing. They don't have, say, a Suzuki. How could I forget about it? They want him in the lineup every day.
Oh, yes, so. Yeah, yes. But, I mean, I thought you were focusing on the guys up the middle. I know Suzuki. I mean, I think he's going to get his rest here and there. I think he's still young, obviously, but, yeah, it's good to rest them. And
you know, but that's what the Carp do, is they're giving all their guys basically a chance to rest. They don't, I mean, other than those, a couple of guys who are going to play 140 games about. But basically, they're not a team, I don't think, that panics when they have a player, you know, when they have players who are competing for players playing time.
Because mm-hmm.
the manager says, no, we're just going to, okay, you're going to get more rest or you're going to get less rest.
Okay. So, yeah. But, yeah, thank you very much, Max. And, again, don't think at all for one second that these teams are putting all this money into this, especially the Carp. Who have
Carp Academy.
The Carp Academy, they're not spending all this money to produce players who are going to be playing for the Houston Astros one day. That's not their goal.
Okay, no.
That's not the end game. They want these guys to come up and be productive here in Japan and help, hopefully. And I'm rooting for Batista. I mean, he's going to come to Earth, and people are going to...
You're making him sound like he's an alien.
He was hit like one those first four games or so, but yeah, I think the more he plays, the more weaknesses they'll find, and then he'll have to make adjustments, and then we'll see how he does on this level. So I don't think it's that easy just to look at the numbers and say,
no.
Oh, this guy is ready to go.
No, I don't think he's going to hit 100 home runs the rest of the season, no.
Yeah, that's a good bet. All right, guys. Well, thank you for hanging in there. Anyone else who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up at Twitter at JBWPodcast and hashtag it High Heat. Or you can leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Look for us on iTunes.
See you at the ballpark, if I'm lucky.
Enjoy your baseball.